Yeah, for sure. There's sessions where I work on the things that are actually limit for me. And then I work on just cleaning up movements, cleaning up solving, right? And those are two completely different things. Yes, you can find those two things and find limit effort, but chances are you're going to dilute the ability to learn what limit is. You're going to dilute the ability to learn problem solving and to learn like what clean movement is, right?
Hey, welcome to the Test Piece Podcast. This podcast is about all things high-level climbing. My name's Joshua Horsley. I've been climbing for 25 years, and I love staying at the cutting edge of climbing.
Hi, my name is Timothy Kang. I'm a pro climber, a coach, and a route setter, and climbing is my life.
We started the podcast to explore and articulate what it takes to climb at a high level, what it takes to go from good to great. Okay, let's start the podcast. All right, Tim, my dude, how's it going, man?
Josh, my dude, it is going great.
Tim,
phenomenal.
You phenomenal, the word of all podcast starting. Tim, you are in your closet as usual, but I wasn't even sure if you were going to be in your closet because I know you have 40 people staying at the house with you. I figured there would be someone in your closet already, but glad you found a nice quiet place to do the pod with me today.
Yeah, no, it's been... Yeah, as most people know, I have always, you know, my friends climbing with me, but I'm the only house in Vegas that my friends know about, so they, of course, naturally stay here. And I thought the season would be the only time people were here, but we can milk the season as long as we want, I guess. So.
You have a frat house, Tim.
I have a frat house. Yeah, I have a climbing frat house.
How many people are there right now?
Well, right now, a bunch of people just left, but right now, there's four others just sleeping in my living room.
A bunch of people just left. You only have four people visiting.
Yeah. Last week there was seven. Yeah.
Wow.
There was seven.
You got a new dog? Yeah.
We just got a new dog. I actually haven't told my mom yet, so I have to tell her, you know, probably before she hears this. But I was a little bit nervous because she'd probably just like, I don't know, we never had pets growing up and stuff. And she has like maybe stronger, but she had dogs growing up, so maybe she'll be psyched. And he's a puppy. So he's a Cavapoo, if anyone's curious.
You do death-defying highball climbing. I don't think your mom is going to be upset if she hears that you got a puppy. I think she'll with it.
That's the stuff she cares about. No, it's not the life risking. It's the small decisions like, how are you going to take care of a dog?
You got this, man. You can do this.
I got this.
Well, what do you guys... What's everyone there for? And I'm also curious, it's been raining. Must be getting hot. It's late March. Like, I don't know if they're not just coming for red rocks and bouldering, like what comes in the season next? Like, I mean, I know Vegas is just a mecca for year round climbing, but like, you have your idea about where you might end up climbing once red rocks just too hot.
Yeah. I mean, casinos are always year round. No, I'm just kidding. Felipe is here for a month and a half. He's my buddy from Brazil, who is very, very, very accomplished climber. He's one of the strongest competitive and rock climbers in Brazil, next to the other Felipe Camargo. But yeah, my buddy Felipe, who we're the same age, wanted to visit. And so since he's been here, I mean, you guys know from the previous episodes, if you listen, that he's kind of like saved my climbing. He's really helped me. We just get psyched and we just go out a lot. The last like week, we haven't really gone out too much. Because of some weather and just like, I don't know, just like whatever stuff's happening. But I had some like younger kids who I coach. Well, I coach one of the kids and he brought his friend. And then some friends that I grew up climbing with, just I wanted them to visit, especially while Felipe was here. And one of them's Brennan, who shot my focus film. And I just wanted him to film a little bit extra and just like capture some more like lifestyle, more authentic type of footage and video type stuff, which I just like was psyched. We would go out for hours and hours a day and just like have really nice sessioning and, you know, send some awesome, like the energy is just always so awesome when we go out. And I just wanted Brennan to turn the camera on. So a lot of it was just like, yo, you know, one guy's here, y'all should come, or like somebody makes a trip and it collides. And honestly, the weather's been great. The March has been really good. It's been dry. It's been drier than basically like pre-December. When I was trying Sleepwalker before I hurt my knee, you know, the weather was really cold, but it was very humid. So it was really hard to climb on sandstone, if anyone's experienced that. If it gets drier, it just gets super sticky. So it's been really windy and it's been really dry lately, but it's been rainy sometimes, which is pretty frustrating because, you know, obviously on sandstone, especially, but Red Rock, you can't really climb after the rain for a couple of days. So yeah, I mean, sometimes
PSA just, louder. That's always a good one.
I know
to pass down that sandstone,
dude, yeah,
and water do not mix. Let it dry.
No.
Do not break the classic test piece, please.
It would suck. Yeah, it sucks. I mean, the kids sometimes have been here. You know, some of the kids that I coach have been here like four times since December, or the you know, different trips. But it's been raining like most of the trips, I think, at least like a day or two, and they're psyched. The next day, they're like, "You think it's fine? Like, we should go out." I'm like, "No. Like, first of all, it's probably not fine. Second of all, like, some people recognize me, so like, if they recognized me or like even just saw me around you guys climbing, like, it would be for me like really tough." I kind of explained that to them, but then also like I was like, "I'll show you guys." So we actually spent a day one time after the rain. I went to the crag and it looked dry. I mean, and there was a ton of people climbing at the craft the day after it rained. So this is back in like January, and I don't mind, you know, like people don't know, so I can't just like go over and like police a bunch of people. And like, even if people know, they don't really know until they break stuff, right? So it's super hard. It's really difficult. I'm not advocating for climbing in the rain. I'm just saying it's difficult, and I don't expect people to go and like just figure it out.
That's why I love that you're saying it right now, because people like literally don't know. I think at least 80% of those people probably would be like, "Oh,
I
could be breaking this. Well, then I won't come here. Thanks for letting me know." Yeah. So maybe you should police, Tim. You should go out. You should.
Well, I should be nice about it. Yeah. Because I think that abrasion just like is what makes the miscommunication. But anyway, I just brought the kids out and we went to the craft and like went over to, I was like, "If it looks dry and you guys say it's dry, we can climb." I basically just showed them. I went out and first thing I like kicked the dirt and it was completely wet under the dirt. But you know, the sand just looked kind of fine. And then I kicked the sand the first layer, soaked, went over to the boulders. I was like, "That's soaked." And I was like, "The rock looks very similar. I guarantee you, you know, like sandstone is just like that. It's going to pick up the water." And obviously that's why things break even like several days after the rain. So I was like, "You know, we're going to go try Metal Arc. I really don't want to break Metal Arc again, yada, yada." And again. Just explaining again. It to them. And yeah. Again and again, again, again. So yeah, rain's, you know, a struggle. But other than the rain, we can go to different crags. You know, Bishop's pretty close. Joshua Tree's pretty close. Mose Valley's pretty close. Usually the rain is kind of consistent across all the areas. I'm just saying, you know, there are options.
What about sport climbing? Like, isn't there sport climbing crags? Like, are you thinking right now about kind of getting, you know, starting to tie in again? I mean, especially with your knee, I would think that just that kind of ramp up and more moves would be a good way to heal up your knee that last 5% or 10%, wherever you're at.
Yeah. Two things there. I actually am not sure if that's the best thing for my knee. I feel like what's been really nice for my knee is just like hard movement, but specific hard movement, because like repetitive movement gets really tired actually, which is kind of scary for me. But I do want to sport climb and I have been thinking about it. But I think here, and somebody can correct me if I'm wrong, but I think the sport season and the bouldering season is like kind of opposite from each other. Of course you can sport climb a bunch and like the loop and but I think that stuff is quite a bit easier than like a lot of the sport climbing here. But a lot of sport climbing is just getting into season. Like I've been seeing some locals post some stuff in, you know, the more like overhung caves that they go to, but it looks cold, like super, super cold. So luckily it's summer crag and you could basically climb in Vegas year round.
Dude, that's so awesome that it's the opposite seasons. That's perfect, man.
Like, it's crazy. Yeah. Incredible. It's really awesome.
All right, well, yeah. Well, I hope that works out for your knee. I'm looking forward to hearing some sport climbing shenanigans, because that's just really special of a place to get to climb year round. I would have never thought Las Vegas, it's so hot there in the summer, and to think that you can go sport climbing during those times within like an hour or two. I mean, I know, you know, J-Star is there. There's a ton of people who have just made that home. I mean, Alex Honnold, her, that guy.
Joe Kender lives here. Yeah.
Oh yeah, Joe. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, all right. Maybe if still kind of late in the, it's getting late in the year, but maybe if I do visit you, we can tie in and I can
go sport climb.
Really, really, really pumped.
Me too.
Okay. Well, I wanted to say something about the last pod, Tim, because I got a message about Adrian. This is the woman who placed third in team trials. And there was a whole big thing about, you know, where she should have actually placed in USAC, in the scoring and the judging going wrong. And so if you want to hear more, listen to the podcast before, but basically Adrian placed third and, you know, she climbed further than the first place person. So it kind of, you know, and there was this whole clipping thing. Anyways, basically TLDR, she got robbed. Like she should have gotten a higher place. And, you know, we talked about it. We were bummed about it. We complained about USAC, but we had a patron reach out and tell us that basically, like, we didn't even emphasize enough how robbed she got. And one of the big reasons was, is because she placed third, she didn't get funding to go to the World Cups. And we didn't know that at the time, but that's a huge bummer that she didn't get funding, because clearly she is skilled enough to be vying for the top. And so it would be in everyone's best interest if she did go to those World Cups. So the two things I want to say is just really quick. There's a GoFundMe. The patron that pointed this out to me linked that. And Tim, I donated $100 to, nice, to support the cause. And this patron actually did as well. So that's a couple extra bucks. And everyone listening, I'll link that in the show notes. And in addition to that, I just want to put it out there somehow. You know, we've got a platform, Tim. USAC, just pay for her. Like, you don't even have to admit that you all did something wrong, or that, you know, yeah, go ahead and stand behind your ruling, whatever. You know, we talked about that last time where things happen. Comps are never perfect. Sometimes you do get robbed, and sometimes you get lucky too. But they could just take that money out of their bank account, their nonprofit, and support her and just say, hey, we know this was maybe a little off and we're sorry, but we just want to see Adrienne do her best on the World Cup stage and help represent us. So just putting that out into the ether, hoping for the best. But, you know, let's not count on that. And everyone listening, you can support Adrienne on her journey, which would be a really cool thing, because I'm sure she would appreciate it.
Awesome. Yeah, well said. I mean, yeah, Josh told me that basically it got kind of a response the way that we kind of broke down the situation. I don't necessarily agree with, because my feelings and your feelings, I think we're both like, this is kind of horrible. Like, it's just horrible to have to run into that in the first place. It's horrible that it does take away funding, which we find out later. But I think personally, I think maybe this is where the message kind of got confused, but rules are rules. I just don't like the rules, right? That's what I feel, as if like rules are still rules. And that's maybe why it's difficult, is like, you can't change what happened. What you can change is, you know, say, okay, the rules are the rules, and, you know, she's going to be placed whatever she's going to be placed. But I like what Josh is saying. Like, you can fund her anyway. Like, there's no harm in that, because if that's the only impact to this person is that she's not going to be able to go to World Cups or like not get funding for it, that's an easy fix, right? But it already sucks to basically not be able there. The USA climbing thing, this has happened to me many times before, and it's happened to a lot of other competitors. They want to maintain precedence, which is very understandable. When you're hosting, you know, as a large federation, many, many events with arbitrary scoring, it becomes pretty difficult. And just to be clear, she did high point the route, but she climbed past where they thought was appropriate to be clipped. And they make that decision, whether we agree with it or not, or whether it's logical or not. It's the rule that they make. And, you know, once it's broken, they can't change that. But I agree, what they can change is say, look, we understand and agree that it was not logical to make that rule. Therefore, we can like go back on that. That's something that I would like to see as well. And it just sucks to like actually climb the furthest and like totally be on a different understanding of like where you can clip. From my understanding afterward, I kind of realized that they all agreed in route preview, that's what they said, that they would clip from after the position that Adrienne even got to.
All the competitors.
All the competitors,
yeah.
Mm-hmm, they expected that position where they were supposed to clip from, quote unquote, was going to be too difficult. Also, you know, usually, I think we explained this before, if there's no X on a draw and X on a hold, you're free to make a decision where you can clip it past. And especially if you can reach the draw, you might as well clip, you know, climb past a section if it's difficult, and then get to a position where it's safe still to reach the draw and clip it. And it sounds like that's what the decision they made. Obviously, they need to fix rules. And I kind of think that's where I'm at with it still.
You did a good job when we were talking about this last time, where I said, well, you know, rules are rules and competitions are always going to be kind of arbitrary. But your point was that, yeah, but they should be doing their best. Like, they should be trying their best. And so, yes, you need to be careful about what precedents you set. But at the end of the day, what does USAC want to do? They theoretically should want to have the best climbers rise to the top and compete on the biggest stages representing USAC or USA. And so, I mean, in my eyes, with that thinking in mind, hopefully that's that deep principle that you want to reward and support the people who are potentially the best climbers. And the rules are trying to do that, right? It's like we try to do that. And so you have this weird outlier situation. So to me, if they do that, what they're saying, Preston Ford is saying, hey, we care about our climbers and we want to see Adrian try to test herself on the largest stages while representing USA because she has that potential clearly.
Yeah. And that being said, and I'm not saying that you are saying this, but Olivia Ma and Annie Sanders are both phenomenal lead climbers. I mean, they're both amazing. And so like on any given day, like they could be Adrian. And I think maybe that's what USA Climbing or those, this is my speculation that the officials there are probably like, whatever, like, you know, first, second and third, they're all capable of making it to the World Cups. Therefore, like whatever happens in the comp is whatever happens in the comp. And it's like, yeah, I agree with that to a certain degree. I also agree that Annie and Olivia, you know, should continue to keep going and like also go and represent, but seems like this time around they should all get it. It's weird. Just to be completely clear with everybody here, first two spots at team trials are getting funding, but you still get extra spots to go to World Cups. So it's kind of weird where like every country gets a quota, and I think in America, or I think every country gets three quota spots plus any quota spots for competitors from your previous season in your federation who competed well in IFSC, and you're granted more. And so, for example, when we have like Brooke and Natalia give us more, when they compete really well, we get an extra spot for each of them. And so we actually get, let's say in that case, we get five athletes who get to go to the World Cups for the female category, meaning the top five placements will ever, you know, get to go, but three of them won't get any support or funding. And so it really is intense. It's really just like, it's just kind of shitty. It's just, you know, it's just the reality of how the politics work in climbing right now. It is not the case every year. When I got to go for the World Cups, I wasn't in the top two or top three, but I got partial funding. I got partial funding for some of my World Cups. And I thought that was totally fair. And I was psyched on that, but now they're getting none, no funding. They're really, really trying to support just the two athletes at the top. So it's a whole nightmare right now, and it's going to get figured out over time. I'm sure, as what I've been told many times, but just to be real, you know, just so everyone kind of understands, you know, why comps are so like all over the place. There's a lot of politics that go on.
Yeah. Boy, that was complex when you started describing how many spots there are. Well, either way, hopefully we did something good for Adrian, because at the very least, even if she doesn't get funding, or even if one might argue that she doesn't deserve funding, that she, you know, we still want to see her out there having a blast and doing well. Mm-hmm. And, you know, just, yeah, let's try to give her a little silver lining with that GoFundMe or whatever after, you know, she kind of got robbed, because she had a good showing, rules took her down. And whether you want to agree with them or not, that's just such a bummer, man. Like, I don't know. I just don't want that. I think about being young, training hard, competing in, you know, training hard for a decade, competing in my first team trials, having a performance that was the one I always dreamed about, and then getting it taken away from me in this way that just, you know, you don't, when you write up your contingency plans of what could happen, that's like the last one. You're never like, oh, I got robbed, like in your journal. You know, like that's just not how it should happen. So
can you imagine how it was in the venue? Just such a crazy bad energy in the entire, like, that would suck.
Bomber. So, you know, hopefully we made it more clear, you know, compared to last time. Just wanted to acknowledge that maybe I think we did a good job before too, but whatever, it bears repeating that. Sorry, Adrian, and here's the GoFundMe. You know, at the very least, kind of push that out there because we didn't know about the whole funding issue. And so on that note, me and Tim put a lot of attention into climbing media. I definitely am on the gram, you know, scrolling plenty, but we can't catch it all. And so we'd love if there's someone out there who would like to join us as an intern who does know all of the climbing things that happened the last 2 weeks. You know, we just can't keep our hands wrapped around everything. And so if you're interested in helping us curate the latest news so that we, you know, have all the right information beta on what happened, drop us a DM, because we'd love to have you join the team. So yeah, that would take a little load off of our plate. All right, Tim.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I mean, I can't help myself like getting into climbing stuff, but actually nowadays I've definitely like cared a lot. I think there's just so much.
So much.
Like it was so actually, because I was talking about this the other day, because one of the people at the house was like, I wish there was like a Burden of Dreams video for like Nolly. And I was like, there is, I've watched it like 10 times.
Yeah.
But when it was, and the reason why I bring it up now is because like when Nolly was actually trying to do Burden of Dreams, like that's what I was following. I was following like as much news as possible on that. Even when the Dawn Wall was happening, like we were at the climbing gym, like talking about it, like news for climbing was so much bigger. Like this, you know, the small news was because I think there was just a lot less of it. And so, yeah, it's getting pretty difficult. Not to say that the news isn't impressive. It's still like all extremely impressive. But actually what I tend to do is I go on my For You on my Instagram and just like look at anything climbing related. And it tends to be a lot of gym stuff. And I just like to see, especially the comp stuff, like what is getting popular, like what are people really interested in, like how are people climbing. Like I still analyze, like I just can't help myself as a coach to just like analyze everyone's climbing, and I just like tear it apart, and some people are, you know, getting better and some people are getting worse.
Yeah. Ouch. Yeah, for me there's just so much. I mean there's so many notable sends happening, there's so many interesting things going on. And it used to be that there was this climbing website called climbingnarc.com. I don't remember Climbing Narc, but there was a guy, I think it was it Brian Runnels? I don't know. He was, he was able to basically collect everything that was going on because there wasn't that much going on. I felt like it was easier to stay on top of everything, but now my Instagram feed just, I can't keep up. Tim, I'm swiping, or wait, I'm scrolling.
Wasn't Brian the commentator for the old comps?
I don't know. He did do a few of them, I think.
Him and Chris Widener were the old USA climbing commentators, and they were by far some of the best. They're
bring
so good.
Climbing Narc back. Well, again, this back. Is why we need an intern. And you know, if you join the team, you're invited to all the classrooms we do, and just would love to. I know that there's someone out there who is younger and just knows every little detail of what's going on each day, because I used to be that kid, and you know, but now I have kids, and so just would love some help on that from the community. So hit us up.
Nice.
So Tim, when I do spend a lot of time on the Instagram is when I'm climbing on the boards, which is all I freaking do. And I kind of went on the moon board rant, and I realized maybe I had too much caffeine last time, and that's what happened. But I got a lot of love, I got a lot of hate, and I just wanted to emphasize again that whatever negative things I said about the moon board, what really came down to is just that I freaking love the boards. And when a dismissive attitude was taken about my love, it just really, really hurt. Like if Moon had just said, hey, Josh, running a business is hard. We know that all our holds aren't the same size. Like we know, but we're trying our best. Like stay with us. I'd be like, oh, you guys, like, thanks for letting me know. I know how hard it is to run a business. We get it. Like, I love what you're doing. Like, thanks. If you just said that to me, I would have been fine, but that's not what came out, and that's what made me upset. So I just wanted to clarify that, you know, it's just this understanding, like, and acknowledging that there's this whole community of people who love this ridiculously arbitrary thing. I mean, dude, I'd love to be out there in Red Rocks with you, and a lot of people would love if they had the time for that, but, you know, I got a moonboard in my garage, and that's where I spend a lot of my time, and I used to be more ashamed of it, that it's like, oh, like I need to get out more. But you know, there's chapters in life. And also with that said too, if you told me, like, I'm just an indoor climber, Josh, I never have any intention going outside, I would say, wait, let me take you outside because I can show you how to have fun. But also, like, there's nothing wrong with that either. And you can go really deep and explore beautiful things in the gym, in climbing, outdoors, you know, it's still climbing, you guys.
Yeah. Yeah. Dude, if you locked me in a room and said, all right, dude, you can never leave, but I'll give you a moonboard, I'll be happy for the rest of my life for sure. You know, like, but yeah, obviously if I had access to outdoors, I would go outdoors and like climb, you know, in other gyms and whatnot. But dude, I love the moonboard. When the moonboard came out, I thought it was so cool just to like be able to compare. You know, I think the coolest thing about the moonboard early on was the fact that there was one on the other side of the world, or, you know, somewhere else, and it's the same board. And it just sucks to like not lean into that concept like as much as possible. It's a very simple concept. You know, it's a standardized board. Everyone should have the exact same board, and everyone should be able to climb really hard problems and like compare on a leaderboard. That's it. And, you know, and even now people are complaining about the newest set being like, oh, it's not really moonboard type thing. And like, yeah, I kind of agree in some way. I haven't climbed on the board yet, but like if people feel that way, like while climbing on the board, then maybe that's kind of an issue. Like maybe they should be clear about like, what are we trying to do with our product? Because then your product will be a lot more highlighted. And that's to say that Josh and I are in love with the product. Therefore, they should probably be in love with their product in that way just as much. Or maybe they just didn't notice that, like how popular it would get, yada, yada. But you should lean in. You know, I think this is a message to Moonboard. You guys should lean in. You guys have an amazing product. You guys have an amazing community. And like, it's your responsibility, in my opinion, to like make it as good as possible, or at least to maintain that, you know, that ethic.
Well, I got bad news for you, Tim. When you said the newest set, what I thought you were going to mention is that I've gotten some pictures, some reports of the blue holds being wildly varied and different.
No. Yeah. No way. Yeah. What? How is
that
possible?
I know. Someone sent me, I won't name who they are. They own gyms, and they sent me pictures of the yellow holds. And you know, I was like, oh wow, look how different those are. And then they sent me a picture of new blue holds that were, you know, they bought like multiple sets because of multiple gyms, and they're vastly different. And I don't know if you've seen, but you all can look at your holds and look at that. There's a little circle. It's like a no-tech circle that lets the pourer and shaper know where to grind to. And that's how you can kind of tell. There should be at least the whole circle available. So if you see it, dude, maybe I'll just send this video. I was looking at mine because I wanted to feel good about not doing well on certain mood board climbs, and my black holds, I was really taking a close look at them. And on the two holds that I think are the most important, you can see the circle. So there's multiple of these little circles around the holds to let, again, the sanders know how far to trim off. On one side of my hold, it's like a big circle, and it's like, oh, this hold looks fine. And then the other side of my hold, it's through the circle, so it's like slanted. Like I don't know what they were doing.
A lot of them are like diagonal.
What are they doing?
Yeah. Oh, dude, I have another PSA. Okay, so yeah, first PSA is people love the moonboard concept, but also like people love climbing, and what people love about climbing is the progression aspect. Therefore, if you take that away by saying, yeah, all right, guys, don't worry. Like, you can try this V6, and sometimes it's going to be V6, sometimes it's going to be V9, and sometimes it's going to be V4, just because of the hold variety, which it actually could be that different. And I'm telling you, man, like, some of the grades can be vastly different just from a couple of millimeters of holds, because it's not that the holds are millimeters different, they're in cuts. So sometimes the in cuts are huge, and sometimes the in cuts are actually like just micro crimps, and or just bad. And people, I think, you know, PSA for Moon. People get genuine emotion of frustration, and people get genuine emotion of excitement when they send their projects or can't do something. And if they, it's already frustrating. We're going to talk about it on the pod, and we've talked about it on the pod already on many episodes. It's already frustrating if it's just in your control. If it's just in your control, whether you know it or not, how to improve, it's already just like frustrating. And it's pretty exciting to have climbing as it is, and to just like fluctuate that because of quality control in that way is just pretty obnoxious. Fix that stuff, guys. Come on.
PSA. you can climb on the moon board if it's wet. Go ahead. I got a question for you, Tim. So someone commented on the Instagram post I made about my complaint about the different size moon board holds. Mm. And the person said something, I'm totally paraphrasing. I don't know who it was. I don't think they're trying to be mean or anything, so this isn't calling them out. They said something along the lines of, it's just for training, like it's fine for them to be smaller. And I think what really, so I want to say like how I feel about that, or why I think that's wrong.
Okay.
And then kind of hear your approach to it. And I think what really irritated me about that is that I'm like, do you really know what training is then? Like climbing on small holds is not training. Climbing on big holds is not training. Big moves is not like, That's not what training, like getting better at climbing is more complex than just saying put smaller holds on. And now I might have felt differently if this person was the number one ranked moonboarder. They had done everything and they were like, hey, I could up my challenge. You know, and even then, like I kind of disagree, but my hunch is that's not them. And so, yeah, how did that comment make you feel?
Well, I think at the most objective layer, that's correct. You know, like, obviously it's just a training board and it's just a bunch of holds. So, like, obviously you could just enjoy, Josh, like, you can just enjoy your time. But it's so far from the point of, like, why we climb and, like, how we progress and, like, how we've talked about this many, many, many times. And, like, and I'll just take the stance as a coach, like, in reality, most people don't improve that way. In reality, most people have to have fun and, like, have to understand how to teach themselves. And if a huge aspect that we have noticed in climbing is kind of about, like, oh, your understanding of your style and, like, where you tend to go towards what style of climbs in the gym, yada, yada. Like, there are so many, I've coached not that many people, but almost everybody that I've coached and a lot of people that I pay attention to in the gym tend to gravitate towards certain things, right? Well, they gravitate towards certain things because of experiences. Well, the experiences sometimes are bad experiences, sometimes a good experiences. If all that is because of a product like that and because of a quality control aspect, then it should be fixed. And it should, if it happens to apply to the training, and yeah, like I said, at an objective layer, you're correct. But in reality, when push comes to shove and you see people interact with the product, if they don't care about that, then it is an objective truth that it does matter, right? And so that's where it gets complicated. Like, yes, Moon, you can defend it that way. Yes, this other person, you can defend it that way. But you're so wrong in that you're not paying attention to how people actually interact with the product. And it's kind of like, I don't know, it's just good business, in my opinion. I'm not even a business person. Like, it's, in my opinion, it's just good business, or my understanding, it's just good business to pay attention to your customer, right? If you pay attention to your customer, you make the customer happy, then you're going to be fine.
What are you talking, dude? That's business one. You are a good businessman.
What the hell?
Customer 101. Business 101, what your customers want. And yeah. I think they do understand because they really support Ravioli Biceps a lot.
Right.
They do these videos around it. They've done that whole Moonboard Masters. And they even had, like, the competition where they were all on the same board but in different locations. Yeah, what if they had said while they were doing that, hey, by the way, these holds are all completely different. We have no idea what's going on. I don't know why
but
we're
don't
doing
worry.
Them.
Yeah, it's just for training.
It's just for fun.
It's not for fun. It's just for training.
All right, Tim. We've been ranting too hard on the moon board. I do love the moon board. I do love the tension board. I do love the kilter board. I do love indoor climbing. I love outdoor. I love it all. And that's where what really got me was is the dismissiveness. I can't talk. The dismissiveness of my love of the customer's love of what's really what you're saying. What's really going on? You can say wherever you want. Disclaimer, like, this is just for fun. It's like, go ahead and say that disclaimer, but that's not what's really going on. And they know, Tim.
Yeah, it must be hard. I mean, I can't relate. I have no idea what goes on, but it must be hard to have good quality control, but maybe slow it down. You know, like, maybe they got excited about how many people liked it and stuff. Just slow it down. It's fine. Like, I literally, dude, I remember, like, at PG, sorry, we can move on, but at Planet Granite, like, early on when we had 2016 set and 2017 came out, like, we didn't get that set for a long time, you know, and we're like so antsy about it, but also we didn't care. We kind of understood that it's like, okay, it's probably difficult to, like, get all those holes and buy them and stuff. Like, we just had what we had, but man, when I got it, I wanted it to be perfect, you know, and, like, that's actually what I counted on early on, was that it was going to be perfect. And, you know, perfect kind of entailed that it was the same board as everywhere else. And the first time I experienced it was when I went to a different gym for a competition. And I went to a different gym in that area. We went to Colorado and I went to Movement Rhino, and Movement Rhino had a really soft 2017 set moonboard. And I sent, like, five or six projects that I mean, maybe it's not the same board anymore, but this was, like, you know, I don't know, 4 years ago or 5 years ago or something. And I sent, like, five or six projects that I had been trying for months, like, actual months. And because I only had, like, less than 15 climbs left on the 2017 set. And I sent, like, five or six of them. And I was like, wow. Like, and the first time I even warmed up on the board, I was like, wait, Danny, come over here. Like, look at these holds. They're huge. They're jugs here. Like, they're so, and yeah, we had especially bad holds and they had especially good holds, but I think I was mostly disappointed. I felt robbed of, like, my entire, like, I'd spent months and months and months trying to send almost every 2017 set climb. I was ranked, like, in the top 10 in the world there, like, on that board. And I felt very, very weird about it. Like, both in the way where it's like, well, did I just do a bunch of harder versions of climbs? Like, how come I'm not first? Like, would I have flashed a bunch of these? It was just so weird. And we're like, yeah, at the end of the day, it's not like I'm posting about my leaderboard ranking. I've never cared about that necessarily enough to like share about it, but it meant a lot to me just to like check. Well, it's fun. It's super fun. And it means a lot to like check your progress. Right. But it just got me really confused. And it made the whole leaderboard system even more arbitrary to me, where it's like, why make it if it's going to be arbitrary? Why make it at all if it's going to be arbitrary, right? And so, yeah, I got super frustrated. And I think it's so frustrated to the point where I almost like never really cared to look at it again. It's just what a horrible, like, what a great opportunity for such a cool feeling and like such a cool product. But it just can be so easily ruined with that. So, yeah, just to double up on everything Josh just said.
Damn, dude, you're just ranting so hard. And I didn't have too much caffeine today. Yeah, do better. I know someone who just sold the, it's actually a well-known moonboarder, well-known moonboard setter who sold their holds, but they almost didn't want to sell their holds because they had really good ones. And that's like hilarious and ridiculous. Like, I don't want to sell. These are like especially good. Yeah, I didn't even, anyway. Okay. Thanks. Good. We ranted, got out of our system. So Tim, the reason why I actually brought up the fact that I have been moonboarding a ton is because when I go in moonboard, I try to climb the rankings. I take my sessions very seriously and I perform at the highest level I can. I show up with a mentality to have an absolute limit session. I want to flash. I want to do a lot. And it made me think about something you talk about often, about how not every session needs to be a limit session. And I'm like, yeah, totally get it. Okay, Tim. And then I just look at how I'm actually behaving and I show up with, I take it really seriously, which is again, a joke and, ridiculous. Thanks, Moon. But that's what I'm really doing. And it made me think that I need to better understand when and why to show up for limit sessions and non-limit sessions and what that really means. Like what does it mean to not always have limit sessions? And what do you mean when you say, Hey, Josh, or hey climbers, Hey, athletes that you coach, not all your sessions need to be limit sessions. Can you just help me better understand what that means and how maybe I'm blowing it by just showing up to only climb the rankings?
Yeah. I think first it'd be fun to talk about what limit sessions actually are, because we both right before had a short conversation about this whole concept. And I basically asked Josh, Josh sent me a list of climbs that he did the other day and they were really impressive. He got to repeat a bunch of pretty hard climbs. And I was like, that's awesome. Like, I was like, this is kind of what I meant about the other sessions that aren't limit sessions. He was like, wait, what do you mean? Like, I tried super hard on these climbs. And I was like, no, I know you tried hard on these climbs, like probably tried to your limit, but the climbs objectively probably didn't require your limit to do them. And I was like, kind of explaining, he agreed. And I said, like, if you did them for the next three or four sessions again, how much easier would they feel? And so that for me is not a good indication of what limit climbs are. But yeah, the discussion today will be limit sessions versus like, well, what other kind of sessions? But first and foremost, I do want to clarify that I think limit sessions and limit climbs are, I can probably assume that people aren't finding them. People actually don't know what limit sessions are, but they're really important. I think people probably look for them. Actually, I would be super curious. This might just be a fun like poll for a lot of you guys listening. Like, do you you guys find yourselves doing limit sessions? Do you guys find yourself finding projects even worthy? I've heard people say like, oh no, projects are for outside. Like, I don't even think that gym climbs are worth projecting. I think first of all, it's a super flawed mentality because you're right in that the sends don't mean anything inside, but like, I don't care about my indoor sends as much. I care about my performance. And so projecting, if it's used as a tool or like limit sessioning or limit trying or finding limit climbs, finding them as a tool for performance, that's all we're going to talk about today. So we're going to assume that you guys are trying to get better at performance. We're going to assume that you guys do understand that limit sessions are definitely worth it and valuable inside for the aspect of performance, because that's what Josh is talking about. Even when you do that, even when you just focus on that one aspect of trying your absolute hardest climb as part of training yourself for performance, that's still just one side of what performance actually is. So we do want to talk about that. But yeah, I think the limit session kind of mentality is kind of interesting.
Well, how about I just describe what my session, like why I consider it a limit session, then we can go into more what different sessions are that could be also, or yeah, what you more were defining it and where okay. I did four new benchmarks for me, four new benchmarks in the 2016 set that were hard for me. And
oh, they weren't repeats.
They were not repeats. Those were all brand new. Yeah. Yeah.
Cool. Nice.
Yeah. So I flashed three things and did another one second try, and they were all damn hard when I did them. Like on these flashes, it wasn't like, oh, I just crushed this super perfectly. It was like, oh, I barely snagged that with two fingers and I reeled it in. And so they were hard for me, and just objective, like the grade is up there for me. And so for me, what I thought about as a limit session is that I showed up to perform and I did. Like I wanted to tick hard benchmarks, new hard benchmarks. And I did that, and I wasn't that tired from the whole thing. You know, I didn't do a crazy amount of volume, but when I did those sends, I really tried my best there. Like maybe, you know, there was some wiggle room. I say there's some wiggle room because I didn't do all the moves perfectly and they were flashes. So obviously like they weren't totally limit, because in a really good flash, you just happen to land each move perfectly. I shouldn't say you just happen to, like that's what a good flash is. And so I tried my hardest and I came close to falling on each of those moves, right, on each of those climbs. And so for me, that was me performing at a limit. Like I was showing up to do my best and I had a good session and I was really happy with it too. I was like, oh, mm-hmm. I showed up and I like tried my hardest. And that's what I thought of as a limit, was just showing up and trying my hardest.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's correct. This is going to be a fun discussion. I think it's going to be so complex, because I'm learning a lot just even hearing you kind of go through that. Because yeah, obviously I treat my sessions differently and everybody treats their sessions differently. And like, yeah, I'm just getting into your brain about it. But I've also heard similar types of things from a lot of different people that I coach. And I always still kind of learn through discussion. But what I hear from that basically is like, you found limit effort, you know, and you found like limit solving. That doesn't necessarily mean that those were limit climbs. And so that's kind of interesting, right? Where if I blindfolded you and put you on a V4, you could probably find limit effort. You know, like if I said like, all right, good luck, right? Like eventually you'd find limit effort on something that's not a limit climb. Like we can all see that, right? Yeah. And so that's what's interesting to me is like, well, what factors made those climbs limit? Okay, so that's really interesting. And that's what that session was for. Does that make sense? Like that session was a limit performance session. That's great. I'm finding that personally, all of my sessions that I've ever had, unless I really just don't care, like it's a pre-comp deload session where I just go in, I really do actually just have fun. The stimulus in my brain is just constantly active. It's like, I am always trying really hard and I am always trying to perform, but sometimes I funnel it towards a really specific type of climb or a really specific type of move or a really specific type of hold. And that's where I find the limit, where once I am able to stop thinking, once I'm able to stop being blindfolded, once I'm able to have no more factors that have anything to do other than with just my ability, that's when I actually find limit. So what I heard from you was trying these four problems, you were able to find limit effort, you know, expenditure through your movement because you weren't actually sure about like what everything to do was. And I think that's actually some of the most fun in climbing, where like both of those factors kind of line up, of course, but we're talking about training and like getting yourself better at that. What you did was you basically showed up to this moon board and like competed, and
exactly,
you tried 100% to compete. And I think that first of all is probably the most well-rounded way of climbing consistently. If you could pick one mentality to have, that would probably be the best mentality. But I have trained in this like very dissected way where I split that apart. I've learned that I split that apart since, you know, I don't know, my first year climbing, and I've worked on either side of that. And so that's kind of what's interesting to me is that, you know, when you texted me this morning or last night and said, can we talk about limit sessions? That's what my brain went towards, was yeah, sure. Yeah, for sure. There's sessions where I work on the things that are actually limit for me. And then I work on just cleaning up movements, cleaning up solving, right? And those are two completely different things. Yes, you can find those two things and find limit effort, but chances are you're going to dilute the ability to learn what limit is. You're going to dilute the ability to learn problem solving and to learn like what clean movement is, right? If I ask you to climb like perfectly and I said, all right, Josh, we're going to go into the gym together and I'm going to pick these like five V6s. Because granted, Josh was doing moonboard benchmark V10s and a V11 as his like, again, what he said was limit, and I said that's probably not even close to like 80% of what your limit even is. Gave him like a 70% number. And let's say I put him on like V6, I said, Josh, like, I do want you to focus really hard and I want you to try really, you know, really well, but I actually want you to climb it perfectly. I want you to look for the most optimal sequences and I want you to just climb it so that you know it's up. See, that's a completely different way of solving and a completely different way of climbing. And that is, I guess, the, you know, limit sessions versus what else. And then that being said, I kind of think about limit in general and climbing as like an absence of thinking. You know, like if I'm actually trying really, really hard, there should be an absence of thinking. And so what is actually there is flow. There's a lot of aggression. There's just like, you know, mostly communication with just your body and the wall. And in order to do that, you have to really distill the climbing into what you understand, whether that's through solving, whether that's through a lot of falling, or whether that's through people spraying, right? If I could just spray Josh, like, if I brought Josh to like Buttermilker, for example, I could probably spray him very, very, very well on like what you should feel and like what you should be activating and like what you should be constantly thinking about. I'm also a coach and I also climb like that. So I would tell him about his knee and his toe and like what to turn and like how to be active for what duration of time. If I had a headphone in his ear while he was climbing, I would even feel more comfortable about saying like right now, like fire it. Stop, like be strong. All those things that you want to tell yourself, you need to tell yourself because chances are you're thinking about that stuff still. And so until, for me, like it takes hundreds of tries, actually. It actually, like, I'll just say it for all of you guys. It takes me hundreds of tries to get to limit sessions on specific styles of climbs. I don't necessarily care that much, especially nowadays anymore, about performing at that. To be honest with you, once you have figured out how to find that in climbing, you can start to train that on the board or on the hangboard or even in a, like a deadlift or a weighted pull-up. Like, there's just a mental side of it. I think, I mean, there's science to this. The brain needs to be activated in that way. Josh says this all the time, where like he finds hard training to be helpful for that. But then finding that on the wall is kind of a different type of neurological benefit. And so, yeah, I would advise everybody to kind of look for that, but also understand that you need to distill it to the absolute bare bones movements.
Yeah, I think what really got me when you pointed out that this wasn't exactly the limit that you were referring to is when you asked me, if I went back to these climbs in a couple of days, how would they feel? And I think I could just repeat these climbs easily multiple times. And, you know, like they were very hard. I tried my hardest in that moment, but that was I really tapping into my true potential where all of these different things were aligned and that's what limit was really fascinating to me. And the other reason why this was such an important concept for me to understand and why I still want to keep picking at it is because you were right when you said that I showed up and treated it like a competition. And that's kind of my MO. And I also, I will say, I do think that this is one of the most important mindsets to, like, if you only had one mindset, showing up to really show up and try your best, I think is a very good foundational thing to do. But as we were talking about before, one of my concerns is that I'm feeling pretty good right now. I'm close to in my best form, and I just kind of want to keep this. And I'm worried that I'm just going to keep showing up, trying harder, over and over and over and over again, and then I get hurt. That's like, because you can't really try 102% every session, week in, you know, day in, day out. And I'm just worried. Like, I need to take a step. I don't even need to take a step back. I need to walk at the same pace. You know, I because I'm worried that this mentality won't help me in the long haul. And so understanding what my next session could look like. And actually, I'd like to talk about that, but something that's kind of funny, Tim, is I end up in the climbing gym the day after that. Mm-hmm. And I was there with my kids and like some family friends and their newer climbers. And I was top roping. So I didn't even think I was going to climb. I was top roping. I think I did 5 pitches of like 5'10". And what I focused on is trying to do it unbelievably perfect. Like as if 5'10" physically was my limit. And all I had to do was just, I'm just on my feet, rocking over, using every little trick I know, but on 5'10".
And isn't it so satisfying?
Dude, it was so fun. Because so I was in so there. Fun. I'm like, you know, exactly grabbing my brain. I was, about. Yeah. So I was like, yeah. so Yeah. I guess, can we go better into what other kind of sessions I could do that are really intense and higher level, but not just performance?
I want to answer that, but I'm going to do this crazy roundabout as I do my crazy roundabout way of answering that, you know, question. I can answer it simply, but I'm not going to. I think it's super cool that you did that. I think, you know, people sometimes do that, but don't actually enjoy it as much as you said. I can see it and like hear it in your voice how cool that was. Okay, I want to talk about the psychology of like performance sessioning. And I think actually most people do that because, you know, lo and behold, it is probably, if you could pick one mindset, the best way. But you pointed out something that was really interesting, sustainability of this, of that type of session, physically and mentally. You're talking about physically, you're going to get hurt more often that way. That's true. You're obviously always trying really difficult things and you're not really distilling. Is that really, you know, physical, you know, your actual limit physically? Is it, are you solving the best way? Therefore, you're always kind of climbing, you know, like, quote unquote, not perfectly, right? Mm-hmm. All right. Obviously, you climb perfectly on this 5'10". So how are you climbing perfectly on this really, really difficult grade, even if it's not at your limit, right? So we can assume that you're not climbing perfectly. So when that's not happening, of course, over time, you're going to hurt yourself. It's funny enough, just a quick answer for that. I tend to have like seasons. I think it was lucky for me that I had like times where I was forced to go outside and times where I was forced to compete. Therefore, just like I noticed in hindsight, naturally, I would like fluctuate with the amount of time I would treat sessions like performance sessions. Sometimes I would have like, I would say on average in a non-performance cycle, I'm performance sessioning more often. I would say if I'm going to peak towards an event, I'm probably having like 50-50 like performance sessions and then just like workshop sessions. And those workshop sessions, some of those workshop sessions are kind of like what you were just saying, but a little bit more like higher intensity, I guess. Like, I mean, you just climbed right after and you haven't been climbing that much. It makes sense that you would lower the intensity to the level that you did. But I would say like even, I don't know, quite a bit harder than that, like V7, V8 is like still a good place to like try to work on climbing perfectly and so on. Okay, but now to actually answer your question, like what should different sessions look like? I think it's important to understand why do you limit session, right? And so whether Josh understands this or not, this is what he did when he was climbing like on the plexi board, like at SF. He just happened to have, I think that's why Josh also says so much the importance of having a crew, because when you have a crew, you happen to do all three of those things really, really well, right? You perform, you work on your limits, so you also work on perfect climbing because everyone else is climbing like way better than you in all these styles that you aren't climbing well at, but then they're also learning the aspect that they're not so good at that you're really good at. If you have a perfect crew, you happen to do it. If you didn't have the perfect crew, you got to understand that, well, limit sessioning is good for what it's good at. You got to that limit session based on a pyramid. So you have to work on that pyramid. That's kind of what I wanted to kind of go into. So limit session is really interesting, but it can mostly improve the ability to try hard or climb well in a specific style or hold set. In my experience, the body is still timid in newer holds and newer movements, no matter how good you are at certain things. And that's also why I've said to a lot of people and, you know, PSA guys, just because you can climb a grade or you ascended this climb that was a difficulty, it does not grant you that ability. Okay. I don't know who needs to hear this. Maybe it's all of you. Just because you have ascended this climb that says V10 does not mean you're a V10 climber. You all know that. Oh, well, maybe you don't know that, but you can feel it, right? When you get up, you're like, oh, well, but I still got this V7 thing that's like super complex for me. Great. So that's what I'm talking about is like, great. Your ability to understand at the highest limit in that way, it's best for you in your interest as a climber. It's best for your interest as a climber to understand what exact factors you were able to accomplish or do well to climb that thing. And then what other things are you missing? Right. And my understanding is that there's a lot of pyramids in climbing that like eventually funnel to a peak of like, that's what's going to get me best at this thing. And really good climbers have really good, strong pyramids or have really strong specific pyramids that they then overdo on other climbs, which is okay. Obviously, it's okay. I'm not one to nitpick or judge or criticize anyone's growth in climbing, but I would say that my hindsight has taught me that maybe the best climbing, the most ideal skill set you can accomplish is a wide pyramid in all sorts of different climbing styles. And it gets really interesting where like how you generate dynamically on like a pinch type 45 degree climb versus like climbing really precariously and slow and developing tension on like a 10 degree overhung climb on these crimps. There are so many different ways to climb and like climb well. Therefore, obviously, you need to have a wide pyramid and a wide understanding, and limit sessioning is not going to find that for you. But of course, you need to kind of refine that point at the top of your pyramid. So that's kind of me saying like limit sessioning is absolutely key once you understand your pyramid. But I would say most of the other time you should be looking for your pyramid. You should be understanding like what is missing from this pyramid. And so I guess like, what am I talking about into the pyramid? Like when you go into the gym and you actually, or you go outside and you start trying a problem, do you actually understand what the problem is? And by the way, this conversation kind of came to be from a previous conversation or previous question about the checklist of like falling. So once you fall, and I did write notes on that if we end up talking about it today, but like if we get to it today, but the post-fall checklist, like, okay, you fell. What do you immediately think about? Well, what we're talking about right now is kind of before that, or like kind of during that process of climbing, where like, what do you look for? Like, what are you actually trying? Like, what do you end up gravitating towards? And I think people just should start paying attention to that. If there's one thing you kind of get from this conversation, rather than like practical, like, well, this is where you are and this is what you should do, that's way too specific. I think if anyone really needs that type of help, you got to get a coach. And to find a good coach that actually understands that is good luck. But I think that's kind of where that is in climbing right now. But one thing I want people to be aware of right now is, what do you gravitate towards? Is it the same thing? Do you always end up, as you like get warm and you start trying harder and harder and harder and harder, do you end up trying the same style? Do you end up, you know, grabbing the same holds? Well, you're getting to your limit in that specific pyramid. Therefore, you should just take some time throughout your cycle or throughout your session to do different pyramids. Actually, it's a great time to plug my pro tip. Can I do that?
Go for it.
My pro tip is to do gym field trips. I think it's something I've said before. It's actually not my pro tip, but that's a part of the pro tip. Do gym field trips. I mean, I think I had just as much fun going to gyms and having a field trip as I go outside. It's complete truth. It's absolute complete truth. If I drove 2.5 hours to the Boulder field, which I did almost every other weekend when I was living in the Bay Area, I had just as much fun, maybe even more fun, because there's so many more climbs. My pro tip actually there is what Josh was saying earlier, or what we said about Josh. Treat them like a comp. It's funny enough that I wrote that. Find a large variety of problems to test yourself on, then maybe work some, then work skills. It's the best bang for your buck. So don't just go to a gym and be like, wow, this gym is gorgeous, it's so cool, and then do your thing. Don't go and do that. I would never do that. You know, you just spent time and money to like go to a completely new gym. Chances are you don't have a membership at that gym. So you're paying a day pass and you go in. Like, I usually spend the first 30 minutes of the gym, like, you know, slowly warming up off the wall while walking around and picking my comp climbs for the day. I don't set a timer. I don't write it on a piece of paper. I just look through the climbs where I say, all right, that's going to be good. That's going to be good. That's going to be good. Because chances are you're going to start and then you're going to look at the other side of the gym and be like, damn, I should have tried that one, you know, while I was fresh or something. And that would have been so good for me. But like I said, yeah, treat them like a comp, do gym field trips, work on a variety of problems, then work on some for longer. And then if you have the gas, work on some skills on a wide variety. But anyway,
Tim,
all applies.
I love comp field trips. I love them.
So good.
I said comp field,
gym field trips.
Yeah, gym field trips, and then treating them like a comp. And I have these memories of being in great shape during the season, but then the pass would get snowed over, so we weren't going to Bishop, and I would go to Sunnyvale often and see you. And yeah, it is so, well, you're just talking about a crew and everything and how important that can be. And that's another thing, is going to a different gym, climbing with a new crew and seeing new things in a different way. And I just want to say again how I loved when you talked about, you said plexi. Basically, it was like a spray wall, but it was on plexiglass. And this was a common session I would have with my buddies, Max Zolotukin and Mark Heal. And this idea that we were doing a bunch of different things at once is a really interesting thing. I see what you're saying, where when you see other people exhibit a technique in an excellent way, then, and it's often a climb that maybe you wouldn't have picked out for yourself because it's, you know, exposes a weakness of yours. You get to be working on other aspects of your climbing. That's not just your narrow pyramid that you crush at, that is so tempting to do. And so I'll go into that, but I want to say the gym field trip is so fun. And I was exactly like you, where you walk around, you say, this one, this one, this one, you pick around, you know, 5-6 climbs, and you and you try flash, you know, like it's, to me, it was about flashing because you have so many climbs and it's hard to not get totally exhausted and just wreck yourself on one climb. I love that. Okay, Tim, I just want to get still nitty gritty on these different sessions a little bit, because what I heard from some of that too is that it's okay that my performance mindset is that, like, this try hard mindset is okay. Or actually, I should ask you, is it okay to always show up at sessions with ultimate try hard but then work on these different aspects? Like, what if I told you that, you know, tomorrow I was going to go in and I'm going to rope climb, you know, can I still bring that, like, really, I guess it's not just performance mentality. Like, there's different types of sessions. I guess, like, where I'm trying to tease out is, like, there's one thing to, like, should I always be trying my hardest, or is that idea of trying your hardest, it can be just applied towards, like, those 5-10s I talked about.
Right.
And so just kind of understanding, like, should I always be dialing up the intensity in my brain? And you know, going to absolute limit failure, or, you know, how many times do you go into the gym, or do you ever go into the gym and just kind of not actually try that hard, but be working on, say, slab technique or something?
Absolutely. And the answer is, it depends. The answer to that is yes, I absolutely change the course of my session, but still have, like, a preset idea that, all right, I hope I can do my best this session, right? Because the goal is long-term, like, and this is, sorry to kind of plug in another thing. We were talking about type one and type two goal setting, right? Where, like, type one is like, all right, best thing that you're going to do that day and, you know, accomplish and have performance and achievements that day. But type two is like, okay, but a year later, are you growing, right? And it's really important in climbing, in my opinion, to really understand that those sometimes are in line and sometimes they're exactly oppositional to each other. And so what I would say is, yes, most of my days I have this type one oriented mindset with a type two foundation on a plan, or, like, preseason, I've really thought about it. Therefore, I can kind of keep in track. What I will say, though, is usually for me, when I had enough time and enough, I guess, like, consistency in the gym, that's when I would care the most about, like, deviating off of that. When I don't have that much time and I'm just, like, getting in sessions as much as I can. For example, like now, I just don't care that much. So to be clear, it depends. I would say, like, if you don't have that much time, you should just, this is just an interesting conversation, but mostly you should be performing as much as you can. And, like, most of your sessions are going to be limit. Let's say, though, you have consistency, you have just a job, or, like, you go to school and you go to the gym, like, consistently, and every day is going to feel pretty different. But what you do is, the way I see it is, throughout the week, or throughout, like, a month, or throughout a 2 or 3 month cycle, you have this battery tank, right? And every day you go into the gym with a new understanding of how much percent you have in that battery tank. If you have 100, of course you should be trying the hardest you can, and it should be fun, it should be diverse, or not diverse, and you should just be going, like, head in. It depends what you need, right? And that always depends on what you need to grow on, and that's up to your understanding of your base, of course. Based on what you need, if you need a variety, you should be doing a variety. If you need to get really good at this one skill, you should be just doing that one skill. The intensity should be met with what's left in your battery. So if you walk in and you're like, I don't know, I've just had, like, 3 super limit sessions in this style, and, like, I don't know, but I'm psyched, I should try. It's like, that's not a good indication that you should be going for 100% in that session. But maybe you're still psyched, so the mental battery tank is high, but the physical battery tank is low. That's great. Well, there's a lot of ways to kind of test that, right? You can do all these crazy rounds. You can do a bunch of different games. Like, I don't know, you can, what Josh said, you can just do slabs where they're really, really mentally exhausting. You can then do endurance that day where, like, maybe the types of holds you're grabbing aren't so small, because what you just did 3 sessions on was the moonboard, but you can now just do an insanely difficult session. That's why I think climbing is so awesome, where you can work on, basically, you can work on power, which is the highest intensity of power and strength. You can work on power endurance, which is, like, a lower version of that strength expenditure, but you do it consistently, so you're good at that over time. And then you can work on endurance, which is, like, a very, very low intensity, just your ability to have that capacity to stay on the wall or to maintain those movements. Basically, it just so happens that I start at the top with power. Then I go to power endurance. Then I go to endurance. Obviously, it doesn't always work like that, but that's when I say it depends. You walk into the session. What should you do that day? What can you do that day? That's the question you should be asking for yourself. And I think also double check that it's coming from an authentic place of like, no, objectively, I should be doing this rather than your psych. And your psych could just be that your mental battery tank is pretty high. Therefore, you can have a more complex session. I would say you can have a more complex session. If sometimes you're just like really mentally low, but you're physically really high, go campus board. That's a great time to campus board. You don't have to think that much. You just like hit these holds like crazy and you get a really good intense session. If that's mostly what you do, maybe flip it and like drop the intensity a bit, make it really complex where you're solving, you're trying to find all these crazy foot betas and like weird positions and you're leaning into that. The best answer there is it depends on you. It depends on what you need and it depends on where your battery tank is at that day or that part of the week or that part of the month or that part of the training cycle.
To my God. Oh, it really does. I got a confession. I've never trained endurance before in my life. I'm not sure if I've ever even really trained power endurance. Like what power endurance to me is, I'm going to rope up today just because my friend wants to rope up, or maybe I have a sport climbing trip coming up. So I should probably rope up, but I wouldn't call that training as much as just, I mean, it's like you're tying in. It's just, Tim, something you said that really resonated with me is you're talking about if you don't have a lot of time or maybe you're not so consistent that you become more or one can become more performance oriented or that seems to happen. And I think that's something that I'm dealing with now compared to when I was younger is like, I used to be in the gym a lot, you know? And I think I was more in tune with my, we'll say battery, mental and physical states than I used to be. And I think I was better at just kind of auto-regulating a bit more and just be like, I'm not feeling it today. But, and knowing that I'm going to come back tomorrow made it feel a little different. But something that the boards and even I actually in some ways do gym field trips right now because I don't have a gym membership and there's, a few gyms around me and, sometimes I go to the Bay. And so in some ways, like the gym is not a consistent thing for me. The moon board is a consistent thing for me. And what I'm finding is that I have this idea of showing up and performing at my best. And it's like a competition always. But then what happens that's a little insidious that just hearing you talk about this, I realize that, well, sometimes I'm tired. Like I've done 3 moon board sessions and I show up and I don't do well. Let me tell you, dude, it hurts my mental state. I'm like, fuck, like I didn't get a new benchmark or I only got 1 or 2 new benchmarks. Like, and there's so goddamn many. And I really am like, you're weak. Like what's wrong? Like you're out of shape, but I'm not, it may just have been a day. Like you can't compete at your highest level day in and day out. And it kind of like bothered me when you said, I was like, oh damn, that's what I'm doing.
Yeah.
You can't
it
do
maybe
that.
Kind of when I was younger, like all this conversation and like even podcasting in general has like made me reflect a lot as like myself as a climber. And since I was a kid, I've always been obsessed with like being the most perfect climber and like not myself, but finding that and like what would that look like? What kind of gym does this perfect climber have? What do they do? And like, is it just a moon board? Like, obviously not. Okay, so that's interesting. Like, what is it? Like, but is a moon board a part of that? It's like, oh, it is actually. Like, it's a small, but like maybe in some parts of the year, based on what age this person is, or like what strength output they have, or like what leaks they have, it's a huge part of their year. Sometimes it's not. I think that's so interesting to think about it this way. If you had the opportunity to have the perfect gym, where you said like you had access to all these holds and all these walls and stuff, what would it look like? That for me has really formed how I train. Where I'm like, well, I don't have the perfect gym, but if I had the perfect gym, I would have these types of holds and these types of walls for these reasons. And then can I find any sort of movements or like any sort of consistency or any type of drill that would still replicate that? And I think that's how I got better at climbing. Like even at Planet Granite Sunnyvale, where like we almost never had competition type holds, not even until like literally till I left, like which was during COVID. And then even then, like they just didn't pick like newest ones. They just picked like some arbitrary fiberglass holds that are like, it just exists in gyms. They're not even in comps anymore. Anyway, like I think I didn't have the most ideal gym, of course, but the way I thought was, what would the ideal gym have? why would I teach myself that way? Why does Adam Andra climb like this? Why does Chris Sharma climb like this? Like, why do they do that? And just to feel it over time, it goes into the Carlo concept of like talking about not full crimping or like avoiding full crimping like the plague. It's like, that is just one small aspect of how you teach yourself over time. Like, okay, what I feel in the very moment maybe isn't the best thing to teach myself over the course of a long time. That's a really important concept in rock climbing. We're like, okay, maybe in performance, I should teach myself. And this is really the message here. Maybe in performance, when I'm trying to perform up a climb, I try absolutely as hard as I can to do anything by any means necessary to just get up the wall. But in hindsight, in anything else that I'm doing other than the performance, I pay attention to what I should do. Because what you try to do isn't always actually, in fact, is almost never going to be what you should do. You just do what you think you can do. And assuming you have a really, really good, if you're Yanya and I say, Yanya, here's a really hard climb. You've never seen it before. Do your best. Chances are she's going to do pretty good technique, pretty close to perfect, but that's because she practices that, right? Therefore, you guys have to understand as climbers, as everybody, no matter how good you are, including if you're as good as Josh, because he's good. He is good, guys. Like, you maybe not watch him climb as much as you watch me climb, but he's a very, very good climber. But he's still got leaks, right? Of course. He's not perfect.
Oh, yeah.
He's got a lot of performance leaks, a lot of technical leaks. Of course, everybody does. So how does he work on them? Even when he's able to climb really, really hard, and that gets harder, right? Obviously, as you get better at something, trying to figure out your leaks gets more and more difficult. But that's, for me, it's not that difficult because I just ask the right questions. As a coach, I just sit and talk with you and I just ask you, like, what is this then? Like, what do you think about here? And then we kind of find logical leaks together.
Dude, I really like this idea of thinking what would be the best gym to train in. And then basically looking at how you're training and then saying, why don't I train like I imagine the best gym would have access to, and I train on it? Because even if you don't have access to comp holds, that's not that big a limitation. You can say, okay, what would comp holds show me? And like, how could I kind of mimic it? I want to say something that's interesting really quickly about leaks and, you know, climbing something that's hard, but then not doing it really perfectly. And you know, like, just because you said, like, how do you work on your leaks? And something that I thought was really interesting is, of the four hard climbs that I flashed that were like new benchmarks, of the four new hard climbs that I did, three of them were flashes and one was second try. And the one I did second try was this thing called Whispering Aspens. And
Whispering Aspens.
Is that what it is? Okay, damn.
Wisping, yeah.
Wisping. That sounds, that's nice. And the last move, I almost dropped it on. And you do a left-hand crimp and you kind of roll through up to the finish hold. And the move was desperate for me when I did it. Like, I just barely snagged it. So then I went back and I tried the move again. And sure enough, and it wasn't that hard when I tried again. And yes, I wasn't as tired because I just pulled up and started right there. But I, instead of just reaching for the top, I really committed to the side pull, just like really kept my body and shoulder close and took my time and reached up instead of just being like, I'm going to fall. And I just, you know, almost like jumped to it. And it's just interesting how that whole thing, like, oftentimes your leaks are obvious. You just, at the very least, like, I wanted to grind that into my brain. Like, this is how you do this move. Do not do it like you did on the send. That was wrong.
Dude, exactly. Yeah. So a lot of people are probably going to relate to what you just, that kind of, the visual that you just described of like, okay, but when I actually flashed it, I did this and it was limit and I almost fell, but like I did it right. When like, and that's also, first of all, that's super impressive. That's good. Right. Because you just said you didn't do it perfectly. You didn't do it ideally, but man, you committed. And some people have a problem with that. So if you have a problem with that, that's how you do it. You just say like, oh, but it doesn't matter. Like, it's just by any means necessary. I got to do it right here. Some people get way too attached to like, but it's not perfect. It doesn't feel very good. So I'm not going to try that hard. That's not really accurate. But what you should do after that is, yeah, get back up there, figure out what the optimal way would be, then connect the two. And hopefully next time you get there in that position, you'll not only say, okay, but by any means necessary, we're going to stick it, but maybe it'd be better if I also did what I thought was perfect. Now, that is so hard to do. I'll just tell you, from somebody who climbs at, you know, a high competitive level or like trying to be elite, that's really what I work on most of the time. Most of the time, I'm just constantly jumping back and forth between like, what is the limit of what my body would naturally try hard to do? And then what should I do? Why am I not doing that? Like, why would I flash things, or I'm on site, or implications are high, or my girlfriend's watching, or my, you know, sponsorship's on the line, or I'm going to die, why don't I lean towards picking the best option? Or do I even know what the best option is? I think if you're able as climbers to understand that concept, ask yourselves in those moments, like, what, and find those answers, I think you guys will be great. And I think hopefully that discussion has kind of already, you know, kind of opened up a lot of internal thoughts for all you guys to have. I think this is, for me, like the most fun type of conversation anyway. Like, this is so fun.
Can I ask you just one more clarifying thing, just because it's, I just want to make sure I get, because I just lean so towards this try hard and that is the end all be all. And that, and I've talked about this before. I think something that has really been a big change in my climbing in the last year or two, you know, help from you too, Tim, is just this, I put trying hard on a pedestal, like absolute pedestal, just try as hard as you can. And that's always the answer. And I've argued that I think that's a darn good thing to, that's one of the most important things to add to that pyramid, but that I have undervalued focusing on technique, on even stuff like skin condition, and you know, just all the million, like you said, there's a million ways to get better at climbing, and I do think that trying hard is very important, but it's not everything. So, with that said, one more clarifying question for me about sessions that are not performance necessarily oriented. Sessions where I'm trying to flash all these problems or gain my moon board ranking. I'm recognizing, hey, like maybe I've climbed limit on the moon board the last three sessions. Maybe today's not the day to do that. When we talk about doing a myriad of other kinds of sessions, whether they're comp slab, whether they're endurance, I'm just curious about your mental state and if you're still giving it 100% effort, but you know, the 100% effort on a slab climb is very different than, I don't know, you know, a moonboard climb. And just like, how do you scale? Are you always giving 100%? Like, I don't even know if I'm like, mental effort is the right word. Just, you know what I mean? Like showing up, dude, like fucking showing up.
I think this is such an interesting thing. I'm going to say my assumption is that most people that I have coached and most people that I think will listen to this have the opposite problem as you do, where maybe that's your problem, where you have too much. And that's a great problem to have, right? Because like, I mean, that's why you've gotten so good at climbing, but then you have like really specific leaks where you're like, I don't know, just like, this is what bothers me. Well, I think the best way to answer that is to ask yourself like, well, and we did talk about this earlier, like what is the value of the session for you? And you might need to redefine that, where for you, the value of the session is to see progression. Well, you're oriented that way. You need to reorient yourself to say there is value in just doing these types of things, and you need to be comfortable with that. So my answer to you is basically like, when you notice the session is not going to be a high performance session, once you notice you're in the gym and you're like, okay, maybe today isn't going to be what I'm used to getting, no matter if it's for you, Josh, like, oh, I can't, you know, climb the moonboard rankings, I can't send this project, I can't high point, like I can't do any of those things, but like, I guess I'm just going to go home. It's like, clearly you don't do that either. But then even when you do the other things that you know are good for you, you don't believe in them or you don't value them as much as the other thing. That's the leak. That's the leak, is that you're type one oriented for your goals and you need to be type two oriented where you're like, well, but I still believe that all of these things will in the end amount to greatness. And like, if anyone needs to hear that, you need to hear that. If you're type two oriented, where most of your sessions are hangboard, most of your sessions are power endurance, and you don't see gains, like where you're like, I don't know, I just like did 6 weeks, 8 weeks, 12 weeks of this cycle where I was arcing, I was doing all this stuff. Look, Tim, look at my cheat. I did all of this. How come I couldn't perform? It's like, you don't know how to perform, bro. Like, you don't know. And so Josh really knows how to perform, but maybe isn't so in tune with like all this stuff amounts to this in the end. Well, a lot of you guys that I've heard or coached have that opposite. I don't think it matters. I think what matters is, where are you? What are you missing? Are you type one oriented for your goals? Are you type two oriented? Do you even think about that? I was telling Josh earlier that like every time I have a conversation with somebody about their goals, bottom line that I get to after like an hour's conversation is basically getting this person to understand that they really care about their performance. They really care about their growth. And sometimes they aren't honest with themselves about like what they care about. And I think like just the conversation that Josh and I had before we even hit record was that he's like, I'm really starting to like notice that, you know, at this age and like this point in my climbing, like I really do care about making sure that I have fun for as long as I can climb and like still produce result for myself, but also just like keep it sustainable, right? All the stuff that's good. I'm like, dude, for me, that's like golden, especially just like as someone who's coaching oriented, that's like gold standard. What I want to hear as a coach is like, no, but I care about these things that are really going to get me better. They're really going to get me lasting in climbing. Like, hopefully you guys all, that's what you guys can take away from this other than just like, oh, okay, Tim said like, this is what, now I don't, you know, we've always done this podcast thing where people like nitpick one specific thing we're talking about. Bottom line is you guys can get the most out of your sessions for sure. But it's really difficult. It's really complex and it's really nuanced in the mind. It's really nuanced physically. So you guys got to figure it out yourselves. Like I said, coaching is a good place to find that. Of course, you can. And like I said, sometimes coaches aren't coaches. Sometimes they're your friends that you climb on the plexiglass with, where they're really just like accidentally coaching you and you're coaching them as well. But the point is there is that you guys are checking each other and you're checking yourselves. Like, where am I at today? Like, do I really care about like sending this move? Or is it okay that Max and Mark absolutely cruise that move and I'm really struggling on it, but in order to get better at it, I have to do this slightly distilled version of it where I have this extra intermediate and I have to really cork into the wall and get my hips closer and I have to teach myself how to feel like that's going to be successful. Dude, I've learned so many weird clicks in climbing where like I thought I was good at something, and then when the actual moment came, I would like react differently. And to be humble and to say like, oh wow, maybe like there are mechanical things that I thought I was making choices towards that should amount to success, but the foundation behind that was I didn't really believe that. Like, that's a huge leak. And I had to really work on that through, I don't know, it's really complex. I try really, really hard for you guys to like break it down on the podcast, but obviously I'm still learning it, but hopefully you guys got something out of that. And hopefully that question was kind of answered there.
That was incredible, Tim. I got a lot. I just gotta say, this is something I love about your mentality. Is it's all about having that system or that process from down deep, like getting that first, the North Star or whatever we want to call it, just that it's not your strength or it is your strength. It's not your performance mentality or it is your performance mentality. And another thing that I really heard from that is that what you pointed out about me, and you're just right, is that some of my, you know, my greatest strength that automatically gives me kind of like a greatest weakness too. And it's like, okay, I really value this about me. Like, oh, I really like trying hard. It's like, yeah, but like, that's good. Keep doing that. But you're missing something because you're leaning so hard into that. And that's, it's a really, I mean, I got to hand it to you. You know, that's a really good thing to be able to point out and learn that sometimes your greatest strengths make you have big blind spots. And God, that's like the last podcast, strength forgets, you know,
strength forgets.
Oh, that's so good, Tim. That was awesome, man. I felt seen, I felt heard, and you told me what to do and I was angry and I was like, he's right.
Yeah.
And I actually listened, but what I'll probably do is just try to keep climbing those moonboard rankings.
But that's okay. If you have little nuggets in the back of your head, like part of sessions, and that's for all of you guys listening, where it's like, and I don't want it just to be me. I'm not the end all be all. I don't know everything. I'm not God, but you know, I hopefully can share some things that I've gone through and like still am going through. And it's for me, climbing is so fun nowadays. Like, I still have so much fun with it, but early on I cared so much, man. Like, I really had a lot of pride. I thought I was a pretty good climber, like since early on, and I had a lot of success that showed me that. But then I would go to comps and like really struggle. I shared you guys with a story that like my mom told me, you know, she thought I climbed way better in Bishop and I didn't have that much pressure. So she wanted to support me to just like move out there. And I was like, no, I want to compete. It's really hard for me. And that's what I run into every time. It was like, I would train and train and train and train and invest my money, my time to go to comps and fail. Or like my mom's money, she didn't have that much, and fail and just be like, dude, what the hell am I doing? Like, am I actually like, is everything that I just did like actually amounting to what I want? It's like, no, I'm like super pissed and sad after this experience. And some people will walk away from that. You know, a lot of people will probably just like take that as a sign to be like, this is not for me. I don't get it. I'm not good enough. But I didn't care about that, I think, was like a really important aspect. Was like, I didn't care about failing, dude. I did not care about being not good enough. What I cared about was getting to that place eventually. And so it's really important for all of you guys to have, whether you want to compete or whether you want to be an Olympian or not, which nowadays, like, that's not what I care about. I just care about making sure that I put my best out there. And then, like, when I'm done, when my shoes are hung up for good, I'm pretty happy with my book. You know, like, I'm happy with all my chapters and, like, how I reacted to them and, like, how I talked through them. That's what I care about, is this long, long, long term game. Is like, I'm really happy at the end, which is all these little short term gains, right?
Yeah,
of course.
I just want to share this understanding, or this acceptance of failure. Acceptance is the wrong word. This acknowledgement, this honesty around failure, and then the reaction that you have to it versus others. I know. I mean, I've seen this multiple times. I can think of one very specific. I'm not going to share who it is, but it's I saw a pro climber who was a solid V15 climber. And this is back when V15 was, you would be a pro at V15. Now the joke is just like amateur grade. Now they really would struggle in competitions, and they did try a bit, but then they end up just saying, you know what? Comps like are stupid. Not for me. They, outdoor climb. And I was okay. Like, it didn't mean much to me because I wasn't maybe as introspective as you, Tim. And then I went on a trip with them, and I watched them fail on multiple climbs in the V10 to V12 range that were pretty straightforward, to be honest. And look, those are still hard climbs, and you know, you could take whatever my grade is and knock off three notches and you'd find me struggling too. But it was obvious that it wasn't that they were too weak. And what would end up happening is you would see them get frustrated, get pissed, and then do the climb and do it full of hate and do it badly and force it. And you just think to yourself, wow, this person's a V15 and they're, you know, like in their wheelhouse, they're just a solid V15 climber. And, you know, I'm not saying that they didn't still have good progression through the subsequent years, but just, I'll never forget just watching them fail and how they handled it. It was like, it was more of a retreat. It was like a leaving of the traveling, a going back to what they were extra good at, and the saying no to it. And so I just, you know, everyone has this tendency, maybe it's not for you, Tim. I have this tendency. Mm-hmm. I lean into what I'm good at. But, you know,
I definitely have that tendency. I got to say that right now. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think we all do. But what blows me away is that this may happen at V7. I've seen it happen at V15. I'm sure there's other people at V16 or V7, whatever the case is. And it's just, I don't know. I just wanted to, I think what you're saying is really important for all levels, and anyone listening out there that says, oh no, but this guy, you know, a girl climbs V15, like they don't do that. It's like, they might.
They probably do. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I would say I don't like to say this, and I definitely don't like saying critical things too much when I'm being recorded, because I just talk a lot and I have a lot of introspective thoughts, of course, about climbing, and I care a lot about it. But yeah, I definitely think a lot of people at the highest level are like not people that we should point towards. You know, we shouldn't always be like, oh, this person so-and-so knows what they're doing. We should just think critically for ourselves and think, what is the best? Remember what I said about like, what's the perfect gym? And like, what? We can't say like always like, oh, but B-Pump right now
Innsbruck
is like the best gym. Innsbruck, Bill Boulderfield, these are the best gyms right now. And those are the best gyms forever. And like, that's what it should be. It's like, wait, no. Okay, great. They have great products right now, and these are why they're great. But like, what we want to think about is the most ideal, right? And that's why I think I got a lot of flack for saying like, Yanya's not the GOAT, like, you know, some podcast episode before. It's like, I don't know, how am I supposed to know that yet? She has not competed against all these other people that are at her level, which is totally possible. Like, if you really understand climbing, you would watch Yanya and be like, dude, tons of girls could get to that level right now. And she just got a lot of really good coaching and like a lot of really good climbing. But like, and to be fair, I think she could be the GOAT. I think there's something even deeper than that, where something could come out in some comp moments. I feel like I've seen a lot of greatness come from her. Of course, everybody has. But who really knows until she's like really, really pushed, right? And like, climbing will get there eventually. But like, in my opinion, you don't really know until you're like faced with this massive, massive challenge. So, and in that same token, I would love to see her try like really hard rock climbs outside, because that might be even better of a challenge than like some competition, you know? But anyway, yeah, my point there was like, we shouldn't always look towards the best and be like, oh, they get it. You know, it's like, they have really sharp, really large pyramids, you know? And like I said, the best climbers, the best athletes, the best people in anything have a really deep understanding and a good way of developing other pyramids that help you target and help you digest like what is actually good and what is actually bad. Because performance just from what Josh said, where you see this person climb outside, sometimes performance can just come from a nasty place where you just get something done. And that also speaks towards how much are people actually trying and climbing. Okay, that's for me something I've thought about daily for the last like decade is like, but are people giving David Goggins type mentality every day and every moment in every climbing? Then of course we're not actually at physical potential. We also know that climbing isn't done physically necessarily, it's technical, but imagine all those things were applied. Well, that's why I get surprised where like kids, not even at their highest potential, like I was saying earlier, like climb V13 and harder. You know, it's like, so we'll just wait and see, man. Like we'll wait and see. But I think it's wrong to think like, oh, everyone who's doing well, that's the perfect way to get good.
Yeah, just keeps getting better. I think people do continue to put things together and we learn new things. And also, I know what you're saying about Janja, where I think that I'm not so sure she's been really challenged. And sometimes right, you need exactly. that to bring it out of you. I wonder, do you know, I felt like as Natalia and Brooke started kind of making their waves in the World Cup, like Janja was kind of taking a break. Like, do you know if she's kind of coming back or what's going on? I don't know any behind the scenes. I don't follow it enough, but I'd like to see more of that. That the women's, I would argue that the women's World Cup circuit is more interesting than the men's.
Yeah.
Or at least right now.
Well, I have a slight read. I'll just say most of this is speculation. So, of course, everybody take this with a grain of salt. Please, I don't want to hear so much, you know, oh, Tim doesn't, you know, whatever. I have a speculation that based on the previous two or three seasons that Janja is kind of noticing that other girls are catching up. I think she just went into the dungeon to be like, nope, I'm going to maintain my GOAT status. Because I think what I noticed from her in a couple of competitions was that she was making like pretty blatant mistakes for herself. Like there were a couple of comps where I noticed that she would just like, makes a mistake and you could see it in her like face where she's like, ugh, that was just so stupid. I know Roman, her coach, is like one of the best coaches in the entire rock climbing game. And I just saw that Brooke went to work with them. And so I think I would guess that she is working really, really, really hard. I'm sure she can outclimb almost anybody right now. But I don't think she cares. I think she cares about the long game. I think she wants to be, I think she wants her legacy to be never touched. And I'm sure she's working like that. So I have a feeling there's going to be a huge comeback year or a couple of years where she, not a comeback year, but like, yeah, I guess she's going to come back to it and like really do the full seasons. But that being said, the reason why that is to be that way is because competing, you know, your whole year, and this might answer why like some people aren't competing and you guys maybe notice like some people aren't competing. I don't think that's necessarily the answer as to why we have US athletes that aren't competing anymore. That could be personal things. But I would say that competing regularly isn't good for you to get better at climbing. I think it shows you, it's like, again, performing all the time. It's what we just talked about today. Going into perform is really important. It is really important, but it's sometimes not the best thing to do every session. Competitions are like the most intense version of that. It's like the most intense version of that mentally and physically. Therefore, if you do that 5, 6, 8, 10, 12, 16 times a year in both categories,
brutal.
How are you actually getting better? So I think she needed to take a huge step back, say like, I'm not really going to compete right now so that I can, when I actually want to compete really well. I think a lot of really, really good competitors have done that where they compete for long stints, take long stints off and then go back. And then they just like develop their legacy.
And I hope you're right because I'd like to see just epic
Me too.
Battles on stage. And the fact that she's not out there doing a bunch of hard rock climbs outside makes me think that she is in the dungeon training hard. And yeah, I doubt that seeing the women kind of maybe start to catch up to her did anything other than light a fire under her because she doesn't seem, I don't think she got scared and left. That doesn't sound like Janja. So that'll be interesting. Good. We got the Olympics coming up, hopefully.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, good stuff, Tim. I didn't give a pro tip. And now when we're talking about performance oriented and how I lean too much into performance, maybe I'm wondering if my pro tip just showcases this even more, but I don't have a lot of time to train. I don't know. Busy. Of course, everyone is. And my uber simple training regimen that's been working somewhat well for me. I do my little off the wall warm up and then I do one max hang. For me right now, it's minimum edge depth. So just for me, it's like the 8 mils on the tension grindstone. Sometimes I've done a one arm hang off of the 20 thing, but I do one max hang, dude. Like I warm up, I'm like 20 minutes in, maybe I've been pulled onto the wall. One max hang, dude. just one, but I go for it. That's my thing, right? I freaking
like, do you grab the shit out of these holds, or like, or you actually just, you hang for as long as you can?
Yeah. So like I did, I can't, or I guess I could have, I did. Okay. Last time I warmed up, you know, I'm like doing fingerboarding a little bit, working to, you know, through each edge. And then I did 8mm two-handed hang for just under 30 seconds, for like 29 seconds.
Whoa. Okay.
I need to put up my sixes and my fours, or maybe add weight. Mm. And so I did, but like one Tim, and I went hard on that. Like that was my like max.
At the end of your warm-up?
Yeah. At the end of my warm-up.
Nice.
And then I had my session, you know, climb my performance competition style session. And at the end I do one set of pull-ups. And I go to max. And for me, I was doing ones that were like kind of like controlled tempo, like really full range of motion, focusing on scapula. But then lately I've been doing more explosive ones where not with like a kip or anything, but just, you know, maybe down to like my stomach or sternum, kind of almost like mantling. And I'm sure that were I stronger, I would maybe do a full set of like one arm pull-ups or something, but one set, man. So I do, this is my just, for anyone that's like, I can't fit in training, you are not going to ruin your session by having one max hang before. You just won't. And you're not going to dig yourself into some crazy deep time rut or overtraining by doing one set of pull-ups at the end. And I just like, it's been working for me in my compressed time thing. I just thought it was like good to share. Like, this is working. And it's
nice.
It's minimal, dude. It is minimal effective dose.
I can double up on saying, I've heard quite a few strong climbers say that the best time to do like a maximum set hang, and the best time to, or the best way to hangboard actually, other than doing like volume hangs at the end of, you know, for like endurance or just general stimulus training, is to do one really hard max hang or a set of like really hard max hangs right after your warm up, because it tends to just like not ruin your session, but also it helps like warm up for the session. That's something that I'll just share. For me as a climber, I wish I did that more often. When I was younger, I really, 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 really wish that I did more small hold max hangs right after my warm-up. Because what I was really good at was cleaning up my sessions afterward. But what we talked about today was intensity belongs earlier, right? You obviously don't want to do intensity at the end of your session. So what I would do, like I was like master of volume. Like at the end of it, I would just like my sessions would start, maybe they would crash a little bit early, and I would sustain the longest decline to the end. I would, you know, like get really good at going from like 30% to zero on my battery tank and doing the best that I could do without really hurting myself. And I feel like pretty strong in the body. And so I would do what Josh was saying, lots of like clean motion at the end, lots of like regular pull-ups, but a lot of variety. But one thing I didn't do very often, and one thing that I wish I did, and something I'm going to do more often now, is just like one pretty intense max hang early on in the session. I do it in comps, which is interesting, but there's a training aspect there that is really, really good. Yeah, I do it in comps because, like I said, it's really difficult to spend all that and then like go to the comp, be like, oh, I have to grab this one hold and like not be ready for it. But that's different than training.
Yeah. And I think I've shared before that small edges are not really my strong point. And part of that is neurological and, just being comfortable with it. And so I know I'm not going to be, people say the moonboard holds are small, but they're not 8mm small. They are not 8mm small. And so just, and I know that's 30 seconds or whatever sounds like more endurance, but there's just an element of, I don't want to add weight. I'm trying to get my tissues, brain, fingers, everything just used to 8mm to small edges. And so that's why for me, I'm doing like long hangs on it.
Well, I'm curious as time goes on and as you're able to like do just like way too long on the 8mm, you know, what you're going to decide to do, like add weight to the 8mm or like do two sets of 30 or like go to 6mm or something.
So like, I mean, I'm actually midway through the Beast Making book. I don't know if you know that one.
Oh, okay.
So I not to say, I hate to... I read these training books with all their sets and reps, and then I throw them out the window. I take my intuition and so for me, because I'm trying to expose my fingers to these smaller edges, just get used to it. Especially in my area, there's a lot of smaller crimps on vertical terrain, and it's not what I excel at. And I just need to like get used to it. So I kind of have been doing this where, before I did the 8mm, I got up to a 30-second hang on the 10mm, right? And these are like full crimp, or well, crimp or fold. Sometimes I put my thumb over, sometimes I doesn't. Okay. Surprisingly, it doesn't make as big a difference as I thought it would.
I've noticed that too.
Yeah, I kind of thought it would make a huge difference, but anyways, and then I go to the next edge below it, and I have 6 mil edges, but I haven't put them up just because I'm lazy. And so my plan is to go to the six mils and see how they go. And I should do more one arm hanging. I know it's really good for me, but there's an element that I'm always usually pretty powerful. And I feel like the moonboard does a lot of kind of one arm style hanging. So mm-hmm. it's just not what I feel is necessary. As far as adding weight, I don't know. I'm not against adding weight. I've clearly people have added, but the friction, not the finger friction, but just the having to put on a weight belt. Mm-hmm. Like I'd rather do a one arm hang, or like, is it mm-hmm. really that great to do 8 mil hangs with 20, mm-hmm. 50 extra pounds? And what I'll say is that if I go and I move to the 6 mil edges and I can't hang them, well, actually, first of all, I'm going to probably try putting a fan on them and getting some anti-hydral and seeing if like, you know, it's more a skin issue.
Yeah.
But then I might consider adding weight to the 8 mil, because if I can't go any smaller for whatever reason, I haven't been there, so I won't say why, then I'll think about adding weight. But for now, minimum edge depth. And then if those are too easy, rather than add weight, I will probably do more one arm hanging on, you know, 20 mil, maybe 15. I don't know if I can hang a 15. That sounds pretty small.
Dude, I've always been really interested though, like, because yeah, this conversation is really interesting to me. Like, and I don't like work on the hangboard that often. Although I just got one, so I'm definitely gonna like, I'll join you. I'll join you on the.
It's more fun than I thought it would be. I'm brand new.
Yeah, I like it a lot. But what I have found is always a question mark, which is why I don't hangboard that much. Is like, where does it drop off? Where as you get better and better and better and better at hangboarding and like your ability to grab smaller holds, like as that grows, when does it stop applying to like your ability to climb hard? And that's going to be a question that I'm going to have for you in the season, like a year from now, once you've done all this hangboarding, is like, when did you notice that, like, did you feel like you did all this and then you got really good at it and then you needed more? I've always been curious. And actually one friend that I'm going to go and hit up and ask, someone who I think is absolutely just insane at crimping and hangboarding, is Kiernan, my friend Kiernan Tong.
He's a beast. He's got on crimps.
Nasty strong fingers, and like, and his ability, like he's been trying the nest and he does it, you know, Daniel Woods way, and like, granted, he hasn't done it, but like the way that he pulls on that hold, and that hold is disgusting. Like that hold is disgustingly small and sharp to me. And it's just the most amount of torque I can like imagine putting on it. I just don't understand how his skin doesn't roll. I don't understand how his fingers never get hurt. And so I'm going to ask him as well, like, when does he feel like he needs to drop off? I have a feeling that he definitely like, you know, probably is better at the hangboard than like, you know, than necessary, but who knows, right? Like, that's why I'm going to ask what you guys.
I will say that I noticed last season, I think it was, I was doing some top out and I had to grab, it must've been like a 4 mil or 6 mil, but on a more slab, and I kind of yarded on it. And I'm not saying I was necessarily stronger on it, but mentally I was like, this is tiny, but I grab tiny holds, and it just let me apply my ability to it. Something we've talked about, where are you really trying hard on these small holds, Josh? Like, is there a mental component? Because it's like, if your hand doesn't pop, you know, if you really get into the right position and your hand doesn't pop, then clearly, usually I actually kind of jump off like scared. I'm like, oh, that I thought that was going to pop. And so really getting to understand what I'm capable of and get that mind body connection that's realistic, not just what I think, and finding that line. Cause that's what it's always about. Like, how close are you to what you can do? You want to be right up on the edge. I mean, you want them to be even, but often our minds and our bodies are more disconnected than we realize and what we're capable of. And so that's, I see big benefit, and literally, I don't know if there's even physical component there, but it's that intuition it builds, where you're like, no, this is okay. It feels bad, but this is okay.
That's sick. That just got me more inspired to go and hangboard. Cause that's actually the biggest thing I've been missing lately, because it just, I haven't been grabbing holds consistently, or like haven't been crimping that much. Is like, the biggest reason why I have a hard time climbing right now is just the kind of the pain. It's not even necessarily pain. It's like, I'm scared of a lot of things, like skin rolling, fingers getting hurt, but that would help a lot if I just hangboarded and had that connection a little bit back. So, dude, I'm going to go hangboard after this.
Yeah, I like that argument that hangboarding also helps prevent finger injuries, because it just exposure and just
it's consistent exposure. So, yeah.
Okay, well, that was my pro tip. I didn't do announcements. There's not much to say other than, yeah, would love to have an intern to help us get all of this great news together so that we can talk about it without and know all the details, because me and Tim are only two guys. We can't do it all. And yeah, any help would be appreciated. Hit us up. Check our YouTube. YouTube has just been lit lately. Thank you, Joseph, for putting those out. And Classroom, we had a great Classroom this past week. That was just a blast. We'd love more people to join. We've got cool collaborations on the horizon. Just psyched over here. Lots of fun and good time today with you, Tim.
That was super fun times. Hopefully that helped. We didn't really go into toilet paper on my goatee from blowing my nose aggressively. I'm kind of sick and have allergies. Yeah, I had a lot of fun. I didn't go into maybe another podcast for this post-fall checklist. I know people were asking for it, but I think we went into stuff that was a little bit more interesting.
Oh, I it was really helpful for me, and I wasn't surprised that we didn't make it to our official topic of the day, which maybe we'll save for next time. But that,
yeah,
the, you know, our mini topic about non-limit sessions and how they all fit in, really cool. I really enjoyed that. So thanks, Tim.
Yeah. One more little announcement that I say a lot on the podcast episodes. This type of stuff, if you guys are really interested and you guys like, you know, makes you guys think, because that's basically what Josh and I do, right? We just like reflect on climbing. We think deeply about it. And we're like, oh, but like, this is so interesting to like think about it this way. If you guys have similar things, feel free to turn that into discussion topics. You know, that's where we found a lot of really interesting things, is where people basically are like, oh, we, you know, want you guys to like, what is this? Like what, and that turns into good discussion topics. So don't be shy. If you guys have like good stuff, send messages my way or send messages Josh's way. And eventually we'll probably talk about them.
Well, and also Tim, you do AMAs. So people can always reach out to you if they just want, you know, an hour of your time. It's, you know, some of these topics, they are specific to each person. And you know, that's, I mean, Tim, you're a coach. Everyone's different. You can also join us on Classrooms and ask your question, but, you can see that. I mean, the one thing I'll say about the Classroom is that everyone brings great questions, but sometimes you could go an hour on them. And that's our hardest thing, is just saying, okay, we answered it for the last 15 minutes, but you know, it's always fun to go deeper. And so, sometimes that leads to deeper discussions on here, but if you want to talk to Tim and me, I'll do an AMA, here and there, but you know, usually Tim is better served for that.
Yeah. I mean, to clarify, I don't really have the time for AMAs anymore. Like I'm quite overwhelmed. Sorry, I tend to just like ghost people and like, and if you guys are listening and you've gotten ghosted by me, I am so sorry. I'll get to it eventually. I'll get to everybody eventually, but I definitely don't have the time to do AMAs. But if you want AMAs and you want that type of stuff, join the Classroom. The Classroom, people get it. Like if you guys are in the Classrooms already, you guys know, you guys get priority to like get questions answered and like for us to go deep. I mean, we spend like about 2 hours on average per classroom when we offer an hour, but we just turn it into an hour and a half, which turns them into two hours. We love them. And then I spend like 3 to 4 hours of time to work on notes, usually like beforehand where questions are sent in before. I spend a ton of time. Like that's where I like personally, obviously, like if I have a job to do stuff, like I'll limit my time, but my personal interest is in solving climbing questions. And so if you guys can turn it into that, it helps me work on these things a little bit more deeply. But yeah.
And if you join as a patron, we have all the recordings, just, I don't know, dozens of hours of recordings now. And actually, Tim, maybe I'll edit this out, but I've been thinking about releasing those recordings to our lower tier subscribers instead of just gating it. You know, the Classroom is a special community where people come on, and we've really built a good community there. But I also want to make all of that information available to people, even if they aren't showing up in the Classroom. So if I leave this in and you're interested in that and you just would love to have access to the recordings, but not join the Classrooms and make that available for our $5 tier, hit me up. If enough people hit me up, I'll open up for that. And you know, that's just getting more good information out there to the community.
Nice. Okay. Wonderful.
Okay, Tim, my dude, that was phenomenal. And until next time.
All right, Josh, take care. Everybody take care.
Take care. Don't get injured.
Peace.
Thanks for tuning in. If you'd like to learn more about Test Piece Climbing, you can check us out at testpiececlimbing.com and even book a session with one of our coaches.